97.5, The Fanatic.
What is going on, everyone? 97.5, The Fanatic. I'm Hunter Brody. I have you until 8 p.m. tonight. Tom Alford, rocking double duty today on this holiday weekend. I'm fired up. As always, I'm fired up. I'm coming in here not happy. The Philadelphia Phillies over the last two games have just been extremely disappointing, and we're waiting to see if they can salvage this series today and win one. They're trying to escape getting swept by the Miami Marlins. Just when you thought that this season, maybe it wouldn't be the Marlins. Maybe it was just the Arizona Diamondbacks. Not that that satisfies me anymore, because it's still another dumpster fire team, but maybe they could get over the hump and beat this Miami Marlins squad, and they already dropped the series, and it's extremely disappointing. And I know that Joe Girardi is the hot topic after what occurred yesterday with Ranger Suarez on the mound. He got yanked after five innings, seven strikeouts, and 71 pitches. And I really don't have a problem with it. I don't love it, but I understand completely afterwards. Once we got clarification that there was a dead arm in play, and Ranger Suarez himself said that he felt fatigue in his triceps. And when you look at the velocity of his pitches, he was almost 2 miles per hour down on his sinker, and his four-seamer lost some life as well. And then add in the last two starts, he threw 95 and 99 pitches. So it made sense. I don't love the fact that we are yanking a pitcher when you have to have some sense of urgency, because you got to win these baseball games. It's September baseball. At the same time, there's a difference for me when I see Zach Wheeler getting yanked maybe after six innings just because he has a lot of innings pitched this season, or seventh inning. If you see a starter just getting pulled because we want to limit the pitches, that's significantly different than his velocity is down and Ranger Suarez is starting to get more comfortable as a starter, and they're trying to reinvent him as someone who can go the distance more. He goes from a closer role, a bullpen role, to a starting rotation piece. That's why you're seeing the dead arm and something that correlates to spring training when you're trying to ramp up what a pitcher is supposed to do. So I'm not mad at Joe. I know he's the easy target for pulling Ranger Suarez. I understand it. That's the job of a manager, is making sure that you keep your players in the best possible shape that you can. It's unfortunate. It's upsetting. But it had to have been done. Where I'm disgusted is the eighth inning. Archie Bradley. And Archie Bradley, just to put it in perspective, has had some really solid numbers from June 30th to August 12th. 18 and two-thirds innings pitched. 0.48 ERA. And the hitters have a batting average of 206. But the last seven innings pitched, complete 180, 771 ERA, and the opponents have a batting average of 323. But here's what kills me. He had success in that inning pitching backwards, utilizing the off-speed pitches, not rocking a four-seam fastball down the heart of the plate with any movement involved. So why are you going to throw that pitch on the first pitch of the at-bat against someone who can rock a fastball and swing at the first pitch, where you see a homer going the other way? It's about the pitch sequence that pisses me off the most. And it raises the question, who calls that? Easy answer is JT. It's not always JT Realmuto, though. Is it a game plan with Caleb Cotham before the game even begins? Is it Archie Bradley himself who wants to utilize the fastball? Is it Joe Girardi calling the game from the dugout? And I really believe it's a combination of both. This is Major League Baseball. You head into the game properly assessing what you want to do. This is our game plan. This is our identity. This is how we're going to pitch with each individual pitcher. So Archie Bradley, Caleb Cotham, JT Realmuto, they have a game plan and then they go out. So I would imagine that if we're looking at a pie chart, it goes to everybody involved. You were only a handful of outs away from winning game two of this series last night. And what you ended up doing wrong was utilizing the wrong pitch sequence. You got Jazz only throwing one sinker and all off-speed pitches. You get Jesus, you surprise him with the fastball at the end, but to get there, it took your off-speed pitches. Why, with two outs, after getting what you needed to get done to that point, are you throwing a four-seam fastball down the middle of the plate against someone who can swing and crack it the way that he did? So it's not pulling Ranger Suarez that eats me alive the most. It's the way the eighth inning went down, because that's common baseball knowledge. You saw what was successful. You saw what worked. Why are you going away from what was beneficial for you in that tight spot? It's extremely disappointing. So the easy answer is, I don't like Joe Girardi's decision because Ranger Suarez was grooving. But when you peel back the layers and you hear from both parties after the game was over, I'm okay with it. I don't love it. I'm not jumping up for joy that this is happening. He was cruising. He was pitching very well. And Ranger Suarez has done a fantastic job this season. And he's been impressive. And you can make the argument, knowing you had to pitch a bullpen game today, why not squeeze as much juice out of your starter as humanly possible? Well, when you have fatigue in the triceps, you kind of have your hands tied behind your back. And that's how I look at Joe Girardi's decision last night with Suarez. I have my hands tied behind my back. I don't want to do this. This is part of the beast, though, when you're transitioning a bullpen pitcher to a starting rotation guy after his last two starts had 95 and 99 pitches thrown. The bats didn't wake up either. Just throwing that out there. Offense is dead in Miami. Can't produce enough. But it was enough for that game. Unfortunately, some poor decisions. And the problem is, we don't know who to blame. Is it Joe? Is it Caleb? Is it Archie? Is it JT? Sort of a combination of both, which almost is a microcosm, or all four, I should say. And it's almost a microcosm of where this team is. What's the problem with this team? Well, let's look at the pie chart. Defense, bullpen decisions, injuries, managerial decisions, just not performing at certain stretches of the season, not getting enough offense throughout stretches of the season. You can pinpoint a lot of different areas. Kyle Gibson got shelled the other night. We haven't seen that out of Kyle Gibson ever in a Phillies uniform, ever, as if it's been 5 years. Just a handful of starts. But he's giving you the professional approach. Oh, it's just disappointing. Not that I expected anything less, because that's what this Phillies season has been about to this point. The Braves are losing in Colorado, but the Phillies can't take advantage. They don't pounce on those opportunities. We knew that, though. They wouldn't be where they are today if that wasn't the case. So this somewhat had to be expected, not that it makes it any easier to swallow. And that's where we will welcome in Tom. Tom, how are you today?
I'm good, Hunter. How about yourself?
I'm doing good.
Fired up.
Yeah, I am fired up. I actually came back from a wedding today in Philly. I went back home in South Jersey, relaxed for a little bit, regrouped, and came back. So I will be honest with you. I want to know if I'm a psychopath before we head into your thoughts, and specifically for this reason. I could be a psychopath for other reasons, but specifically for this one, I want to get your thoughts. I kept up with the Phillies game all last night during the wedding, but I DVR'd the game and watched the entire thing this morning, knowing the results, knowing that it was going to be disturbing, but I had to witness it firsthand so I can then share my thoughts the way that I want to share my thoughts. So that's how I approached last night. Missed it with the wedding, kept up with it through the notifications, saw what happened, and rewatched the entire game DVR'd this morning.
Quick answer, yeah. Yeah, absolute psychopath, definitely. I mean, I hated living through it the first time. To choose to relive it a second time through, yeah, those are the actions of a psychopath. Torturing yourself are the actions of a psychopath. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I'll take that. I mean, look, I got to do my job.
You do. Yeah,
but you're right. Most people would probably just skip out on it. But I needed to see it. You know me. I'm a 162. I take this way too seriously every pitch. I can't escape something that controversial. I need to witness it and see it and experience it so I can have this rise. I can have this emotion. If I just read up on it and just saw what happened from a distance and brought up a few articles, that's not the same for me. I need to let it happen and then just, okay, this is how I feel seeing it and breaking it down.
Yeah, no, and I respect the hell out of that. I do. But you went full nine innings. You didn't just like fast. Okay.
So, I skipped commercials.
See, what I would have done, that makes sense. Yeah, if you watch commercials, then you would have been an absolute psychopath. Yes, yes.
But, you're right. I don't know why I made it out that way. As if
I appreciate
was even,
you telling me that.
Yeah, as if it was even on the table that I sat there and watched all the commercials. Can you imagine?
You're sitting there and you're like, wow, I hate commercials so much and just continuing to watch them. Yeah, that'd be something. But yeah, what I would have done is probably watch the highlights, like the nine inning, and then like DVR'd it and like, okay, this is where it went wrong. I'm going to watch this, you know, 10-minute highlight package YouTube always throws up or whatever. Then I'm going to go back to my DVR, fifth inning, sixth inning when it happened and kind of go from there. That's what I would have done. I respect it either way. I do.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I want to dive into the Joe Girardi thing now. With Joe, I saw the reaction. Joe, what's Joe doing? 71 pitches, 7 Ks. And I figured, see, there's some Joe Girardi decisions that just make absolutely zero sense, and I'm baffled by it. But then I have to sit there in the moment before we get information and wonder, what are we going to hear postgame? The other day, Archie Bradley wasn't available, and they threw out De Los Santos for 2 innings, and it was so bizarre. But in the moment watching the game, I figured something has to be up because there's zero logic here. So watching Suarez get yanked, something had to have happened. And hearing tricep fatigue, I don't know. I see the reaction of who cares, just have him fight through it. With Ranger, it's a different type of beast because even him himself said it. Yeah, I'm tired here. And you can see what happens if you trot him out there for another inning or two and something seriously go wrong. When you have the data in front of you that he's losing almost two miles per hour on his sinker and he's losing velocity on his fastball, you have that information right in front of you. You need to use that to protect your players. Now, once again, I have to admit there is a difference between each player and there's context involved. And with this specific player, it's different than, let's say, I just want to hold back Zach Wheeler. I just want to hold back Zach Eflin for another inning because we're playing the long-term game. If there's no signs of damage involved to the body, don't tell me in September baseball we want to protect the player. But when there's legitimate signs, you can't excuse that. You need to use that. So it's unfortunate, but they made the right decision to keep that player as healthy as possible moving forward here.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest jobs as a manager is to protect your players, keep your players healthy, especially a guy like Granger Suarez, who's bounced back and forth, you know, who started in the bullpen. You kind of stretched him out. You said he went over 95 pitches in his last 2 outings. So you're expecting some arm fatigue to kick in a little bit. And I'm glad, you know, I'm not happy, but like, I'm glad it's just tricep soreness. I'm glad it's not something deeper. I'm just, the only issue I have with it, and the biggest reason that the Phillies lost, there's a lot of things. Archie Bradley didn't get the job done. The offense didn't get the job done. This is just a little part of everything. However, I would have had the mindset, 71 pitches, I believe it was, that's not a lot. I understand you have the forearm fatigue. I understand what Ranger has gone through this entire season. I'm always of the mindset, it happened, you know, I'll say it when it happened with Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola. Get your guy out there, give him a chance to get a guy on base, and then go from there. Because he could go out, he could have a 9-pitch inning, and then that saves your bullpen, especially on, like you mentioned, a day like today, where you need a bullpen game. You got 7 straight games after today. You got 4 against the Rockies and 3 against the Brewers, so you're going to need your bullpen there. I would have had that mindset, but I completely understand the protecting your players. And it kind of worked out for the most part. I mean, Neris got the job done. It was 11 pitches. I kind of have a bigger problem with, why is Neris not going back the inning after only 11? But like, I think there's so many ways you can dissect it. But you're right. The easy target is Joe Girardi. I just think everything adding up, he hasn't really lived up to expectations of Phillies fans throughout the last 2 years, especially this year. I just think everything's kind of rolling together, especially when this team is struggling. I think that's kind of why you hear the outrage that you do.
Sure, yeah, he's the easy target. It's funny, you bringing in Hector Neris for a second inning. I always like to think about, what if they did bring him in for a second inning? The reaction would be, Joe, Why are you putting Hector Neris out there two straight innings?
Sure, sure.
You know, so
you can't win. You
right.
Can't.
So this team looks exactly the same way it did under Gabe Kapler. I'm not telling you that. It's similar to what we were talking about this past week when I was filling in for Anthony Gargano during the midday show with Doc Rivers. You have a point guard that won't shoot. You have a roster that you can't play Matisse Thybulle, Dwight Howard, which are your backup players where we talk about the bench rotation so much. You can't play two of your bench rotation pieces with your starting point guard because the offensive efficiency is such garbage. That doesn't mean that Doc Rivers is off the hook, because when Danny Green's playing Trae Young and Trae Young is cooking Danny Green, you have to go in another direction. There's so many things I can pinpoint on Doc. There's so many things that I can pinpoint on Joe. Ultimately, though, the number one issue is this team's just not good enough. So you're really trying to dig deep into Joe and pull every inch out of him as if he's a magician when you have to make all these decisions and they're basically 50-50 and you're failing at such a high percentage consistently. And more tells me about your options than it does the person making the decisions. And that doesn't mean that Joe gets a free pass because he's been horrible. But that's not the biggest problem. A lot of the reasons why we talk about being horrible is because of the options that he has. During that 8-game win streak, you know what I heard? Whew, Joe's been so much better as of late. You know what decisions he made? Putting Archie Bradley in an 8th game in the 8th inning during that 8-game win streak. The difference was Archie Bradley actually executed, as I alluded to, during that June 30th to August 12th stretch where he had a 0.48 ERA. That was the difference. He just pitched better. He was being utilized in the same exact spots. He just executed better. But we say, oh, Joe's a genius during that 8-game win streak. No, he did the same thing. The difference is the player out there actually pitched and made the right calls with the pitch sequence. And that seems to be more of a team effort thing than just a individual player basis. But this team in general frustrates me a lot. I'm watching Bryce Harper today, who one at-bat was outstanding, professional, falls down 0-2, battles back, tips balls, and keeps himself involved, and then crushes a home run to tie the game. And then later on in the sixth inning, with zero outs and JT on second, he's bunting the ball to sack bunt, get JT to third, and Kutch and Didi can't score him. Bryce Harper's one of the best hitters in all of baseball this season with a righty on the mound. And you're telling me you're bunting him over? You know what that is? That's dumb baseball. That is stupid baseball. You don't win games with this team because Bryce Harper's bunting baseballs. You're winning with this team because he's smacking the ball around the diamond. Let's go back to that 8-game win streak. Why were they winning? Because Bryce Harper was carrying the baseball team. You do not win with Bryce Harper sacrifice bunting players over to third base. Now, I need to know after the game, was that something Joe Girardi told him to do? Or was that Bryce Harper just saying, I'm Bryce Harper, I'm, you know, this is what I want to do in this moment. He did it a few weeks back, and it ended up working out. I hated it at the time. I hated it. There's no reason why someone, and at the time, I don't know if he is still leading all of baseball in OPS. I'm going to look that up right now. But at the time, he was the number one leader in baseball in OPS. Why are you bunting? He might have fell just a tad in that department. I'll look that up. But yeah, ultimately, it's just bad baseball. It really is. It's bad, and it's frustrating to see. What are your thoughts, Tom, on the bunting situation?
Yeah, no, that was horrible. I don't understand that at all. I really, really hope it wasn't Joe Girardi's decision, especially after, you know, the outroar that we've seen on social media and from, you know, on the radio, all that stuff. I really hope it wasn't Joe Girardi's decision. It's a bad decision. It's a stupid decision regardless. You just hit a home run earlier in the game. You're the best hitter on the team by far. You're probably, if not the best, a top five hitter in baseball right now. Guy on second, no outs. And you, like, I don't understand. You're paid here. We were brought here for power. You're having a tremendous season. I don't understand that at all. It makes no sense. It's a stupid baseball play. It is.
Yep. And he's third in OPS right now. Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Fernando Tatis jumped up above him a bit. So that's where he's at now. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You already had power. You already showed your dominance in this game earlier. You got a righty on the mound. Not that it would have mattered for me even if there was a lefty. You put your hands up when your stars are up there and you say, go make a play. Make something happen. Be special. Be Bryce Harper. You don't say bunt down the first base side so we can move JT over and then live and die with Kutch. His bat speed has been impressive as of late. You saw him have some power as of late. But ultimately, I'm not living and dying with D.D. Gregorius and Andrew McCutchen when I have the one of the best hitters in all of baseball this season up to the dish. It's just really frustrating. Okay, that's where we begin today's show. The phone number to hop in, 610-632-0975. We are giving away FanFest tickets all show long. So if you call in and you add substance to the conversation, it can't be silly, it can't be foolish. If you add some good substance and chime on in at 610-632-0975, you will receive FanFest tickets. It is that simple. So we will continue it all. The Phillies' frustration. We'll work in some Eagles. I saw some Sixers news as well about the Cleveland Cavaliers that we will mention as the show continues. We'll talk about it all on the other side. I'm Broads, and this is 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. I'm Hunter Brody. 602 on a Sunday night. Labor Day weekend. It's getting chillier out. It's getting nice out. It's getting fall out. Pumpkin spice is ready to rock and roll. 610-632-0975 is the phone number to hop on board. We're giving away FanFest tickets all throughout the show. If you did not get yours yet, now is the time. So it's funny, we were talking during the break about Drake and Certified Lover Boy that came out. Now, I'm a music head where I'm dissecting when albums are ready to come out, their release dates, I have it on a schedule, I have an Excel spreadsheet. No, I don't go that far, but you know, I'm really deep into music. Well, I've listened to Certified Lover Boy probably about 9 times from top to bottom at this point. I always have music on. I'm always analyzing it pretty heavily, and I'm a big fan of what Drake released, and same with Donda. I like Donda a lot. It's two different albums. If you want a thriller or a comedy in a movie sense, you pick what style of movie you like. With this, I enjoy Kanye West, which is an IPA, if you will. It's an acquired taste. You need to really, you know, really dive into the best way to, not to get too sucked into music, but with Kanye West. If you didn't know much about boxing and you watched Floyd Mayweather for the first time, hearing his record and he's undefeated, he's one of the best boxers, you'd probably take a step back afterwards and go, that was it? Because he's technical. He's technical. He knows the game perfectly and executes it that way from a technical standpoint. Kanye West is so technical that if you're just a casual music listener, I don't know if you get the impact of Kanye, but he's so technically sound with the production of the music, the humming involved. If Travis Scott is on the beat and the way that the beat is also happening, the drums, the snare, everything, it's so technically sound that if you're just a casual listener, you have to really you got to really dive deep into it and let it digest fully. And that's where it's different, where if you just think it's going to be bangers and club music, you don't get the full experience. But I like Certified Lover Boy. I thought Drake put together a nice project. I know you, Tom, listened to a little bit of it to this point. Anything stand out to you at this point?
A little bit, yeah. And I'm not as big into music as yourself. And I think the best way to really listen to it, you can't just listen to it one time.
No.
You have to, especially an album like a Kanye West, you have to give it a good 2-3 listens fully through until you can make give a distinct answer on what you think of it. I liked it. I liked CLB. I did. I didn't like the one that stood out to Way Too Sexy? Was that what it was?
Yep, that and Future.
That one. Yeah, and you had good, good guests on that. Good
features.
Features, sorry, yes. And you're expecting, oh, this is going to be an awesome song, going to be a banger, like you said, and that I just thought it was so I thought it was so corny.
Yeah,
I really did.
You know what, though? It almost felt as if he was trolling a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
The music video that came out with it. But I'll tell you what.
Kawhi Leonard dancing?
Yeah. That's one of those songs where it is goofy and it's silly and it's nonsense. It's not, you know, in depth and very, I have to listen to the lyrics and hear what this guy's all about. But for what it is, a silly little goofy banger, you know, it bumps. It's got good bass. It's got good kick. I'll blast it on my car ride in with the windows down at 62 where it says max on my volume, and I'll give it a good bump.
You're maxing out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But I'll do that from tracks 1 through 21 as well.
Okay. Fair enough.
But there's no skips on this album for me.
He did. I mean, I liked the song Little Baby. I liked the song with Jay-Z. I thought they were both really good.
Yeah, Jay-Z killed it.
Yeah, he did. He really did. So, yeah, I don't get into hip-hop as much. Like, when I was in high school, I was on hotnewhiphop.com. Every single night, like waiting for new stuff on, like, and then I don't know. I just kind of got out of it once I got out of high school. I probably should go back to it a little bit, but yeah, I'll always dabble and listen here or there.
Yeah, I'm definitely obsessed. I'd say I'm obsessed with music. It's a lifestyle, though. I don't know where I'd be without it. Almost with sports. Sports is such a big part of my personality. I don't know where I'd be without breaking down sports and watching and having that emotional tie to it. I don't know where I'd be without hip hop. Hip hop is definitely a huge part of my life. But anyway, 610-632-0975. Let's transition to Eagles. I know I've been teasing it for a little bit now, but more Phillies news kept dropping and quotes were being thrown after the post-game presser, and I am clearly way too emotional about a 500 baseball team that probably won't make the playoffs, but I digress. I heard you state that Miles Sanders is a move for you in fantasy. Did I hear that correctly, Tom?
When was this, today?
Yeah, do you not say that with Tyler, or am I losing my mind?
I don't think I did. Okay. I like Miles Sanders a lot, and I do have him on one of my fantasy teams, so I'll say yes. Yes, that was me.
Yeah, but did you actually?
No, I didn't actually say it, but like for the sake of the conversation,
sure. I don't know why I thought I heard something about, I mean, I listened on my ride in.
I don't think we mentioned Miles Sanders today. I really don't.
Come on.
Were you listening to an old podcast of ours or something?
No, I listen every time I come into the studio. I always listen to pretty much who's in front of me.
I unless I'm just like blanking out, but I don't remember saying it. But I do like Miles Sanders in fantasy this year.
Because I was going to say, I had my fantasy draft tonight. And
oh, yeah?
I'm the bad guy that had to force everyone to push it back to a 9:15 start. They wanted to do earlier in the day, get it done. Fellas, I got work, so I'm the bad guy.
Some of us got to work around here. That's all you got to say.
Yeah.
Come on.
Fellas, you guys can all lounge around. You guys had your wedding yesterday. You're relaxing. Some of us had to battle through the adversity, not only go to the wedding, but also go to work the next day. So don't be coming at me. But anyway, I took Miles Sanders last year thinking that, oh, here we go. It's going to be a big year for him. I'm done with it. I'm not doing it. I am not drafting Miles Sanders. And I know Doug Peterson didn't run the ball, and this might backfire big time on me. But you know what? I'm willing to take that chance. I'm not going with him in fantasy. It hasn't worked out before. Now, albeit a whole new regime, which changes the scheme, changes the philosophy. Maybe I'm a fool. I just think that every year this Miles Sanders hype just goes, and I don't know. I don't know. I'm holding back, and I'm not looking in his direction.
Sure. So the big difference, I think, from, because I drafted him last year as well, and I think I drafted him in the second round, early second round. This year, he's kind of going in the fourth or fifth round. So when it comes to fantasy, you like to look for, like, potential. Like, hey, I drafted this guy in the fifth. He has the potential to become a second round pick next year, maybe. And I think with Miles Sanders, when you look around the guys like in that area, I think he has just as much upside, if not more, than a lot of those guys. And yeah, it's like you said, it's a new scheme. There's reasons to get excited, but we've been burned by this, 2 years in a row now? Especially last year?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly said, though. If you are talking about fourth, fifth, sixth round, now you're talking about super later in the draft. You know, that's not where he was anticipated to go in years previous. So that's basically telling you that the fantasy football world might be sitting in the same exact category as I am right now at this moment of, you know, hey, it's not worth it early. Now you're talking about value later on and someone who can maybe, and look, right now as we sit here, you would think that he's going to have a lot of opportunities to run the football very well, to have those home run hits. If the offensive line is healthy, who knows what the holes are going to look like for him to hit certain gaps and explode and maybe gain 20, 30, 40 yards and take one to the house, right? So, you know, it's easy to say that right now, but it just hasn't worked out that way to this point. And I don't know how it's all going to work out because he's not the best catching the football. That's such a big part of today's NFL. Gainwell does it extremely well. He also has a skill set running the ball on the ground as well. And I'm not sitting here claiming that Gainwell is going to be some three down back and override Miles Sanders. But there is an element that he misses in his game that's so crucial to success in today's era of an offense that I do wonder if that limits his touches compared to if you didn't have those question marks. Think about how many more chances he's probably going to get, how many more times his number will get called. It might deflate his value a bit.
Yeah, and that's fair. So that's your biggest thing is that you're kind of thinking third down, he's probably not going to be on the field most, especially towards the middle of the year. Maybe like they give him every opportunity to begin the season, but when it comes, they're like, hey, this guy is not the best option on third down. We have to go another direction. Is that kind of how you feel?
I don't know if it's necessarily just specific third down. He's going to be off the field there. I know overall, just from a more broad perspective, how important catching the football is as a running back. And it's just something that he's limited in. And, you got to play the pros and cons. He's a home run threat that can really do some damage. Just him being out there and scaring the defense into thinking maybe he is going to run the ball can be something enough to impact the way the defense calls a certain play, which could then be the difference in scoring a touchdown and having something else available open on the field. Let's say it's a wide receiver. Jalen Hurts is able to get moving, and he can make something happen with his legs. So just the threat of him being out there, even if he's not strong in that area, is that enough to have him on the field regardless of his flaws? There's a lot of questions, and we'll find out. We will learn more as we know this era of Miles Sanders, this season, what Miles Sanders we're going to get this season, we'll know more after week one, week two, week three, when we get a few games under our belt and assess the identity of this Eagles offense.
Yeah, and obviously there's a ton of question marks with this Eagles team, all sides of the ball, Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, but I think there's a big question mark with Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders has 2 years left on his contract. He struggled a bit, like you said, on third down with when it came to pass catching, the drops, pass protection,
fumbles.
There's a lot of question marks. So I think a big part of this season, I think they're going to give him every opportunity to prove himself. I really do. And it's just a matter of can he, you know, prove enough to the coaching staff, prove enough to the fans that he is willing and he should be on the field as much as possible. Because we really haven't seen, I think he's only had more than 20 carries twice in his entire career with the Eagles. And I know he's been limited with injuries a little bit, but there's a ton of question marks. And I think one that they want to get answered is, can we count on Miles Sanders to be a bell cow guy, a 20 plus touch guy consistently, especially with him going into his last year of his contract next year?
Here's another question I have when analyzing this team, knowing that Zach Ertz seemed to flip 180 on us and sticking around town. Do you believe that this team makes a significant jump offensively with Zach Ertz here? See, he's going to be a security blanket. He's going to help out Jalen Hurts. Individually, having Zach Ertz compared to not having Zach Ertz is a jump. But if I'm thinking about winning football games, does Zach Ertz add a win? Does he add 2 wins? Do you think he's this team's a 5-win football team and now a 7-win football team because of Zach Ertz? Now, when you addressed last season, there were injuries involved and he was banged up and he was also unhappy with the organization that I think played a role in his demeanor and, you know, the way that he handled himself. I'm sure if you ask him, maybe he would have liked it to be a little bit smoother in the moment. Did he get a bit upset and it showed physically on the field? I would imagine if you got his honest opinion, he'd say, maybe I could have been a bit better emotionally about how it all played out. But regardless, how much of an impact does he make from a team win total wise compared to an individual standpoint with Zach Ertz and Jalen Hurts as a combination when you just think about moving the chains? Does that make sense? You know, like, he's clearly going to help Jalen Hurts. It's obvious. Having Zach Ertz, he's the tight end that he's been over his career for a reason. He'll get open. Other teams are going to have to game plan for Zach Ertz. That's still a thing. I know he's getting older and he's not going to give you home run hits, but he is powerful and he does it in a methodical way where he can constantly help you get chunk yards and move the chains downfield. It's Zach Ertz. He's one of the best tight ends in football. Not in the Travis Kelce tier anymore. Just a dip below, but still important. Does that add wins, though?
Probably not. I don't think it does. But like you said, I think he could be a very important piece to this offense. He could take less pressure off Dallas Goedert, be kind of a security blanket, maybe on third down when you need a pit. Like, he could be that for a young quarterback in Jalen Hurts, who's still trying to figure out who his security blanket is. You know, like, obviously, Devontae Smith here, Dallas Goedert has a ton of potential, but we still don't know who Jalen Hurts' go-to guy is. So maybe while he's learning that, he can kind of lean on the veteran tight end in Zach Ertz. So yeah, I don't think he necessarily adds wins, but I think this offense, like you said, is better with Zach Ertz on it right now, at least to start. Now things can change. If he's not getting the targets that he's getting, he's saying all the right things now, but if this is week six and he's averaging four targets a game and he's kind of completely pushed out of the rotation, it's more of Dallas Goedert-centric and he's just kind of thrown to here or there, then could there be some issues? Possibly. But I think to start the season, at least, I don't think there's any way it really hurts this team.
I'd imagine those type of conversations happen. I don't think he's going to get pushed to the side and not utilized heavily for Dallas Goedert, for him one-on-one. But knowing Rager, Chris Watkins, Devontae Smith, Miles Sanders, Jalen Hurts, just knowing the speed and the threat that you have surrounding Zach Ertz now and everybody else, that there's other avenues to go. And, you know, if it's spread around and everybody's getting their touches and, you know, it's more of a normalized, I guess I'm looking for, like, it averages out where everyone's just kind of getting their respected touches compared to Dallas Goedert stealing his spot. It's a totally different vibe. I don't anticipate it being, well, you're just going to get shoved in the corner and it'll be Dallas Goedert instead of Zach Ertz, but it might be Devontae Smith takes away some of your looks, and Quez Watkins might take away some of your looks, and Jalen Rager. So it'll be more spread out where it's even, not so much you're getting replaced.
Sure, no, I didn't mean it so much as replaced. Yeah. Like, I kind of meant, like, yeah, there's a lot of mouths to feed right now. There could potentially be. And he's used to, you know, he was a 90-plus catch guy with Carson Wentz for pretty much the majority of his career. He's used to going from that to going to, hey, we got more mouths to feed. We're going to Devontae Smith. We want him getting eight targets a game. You're really only going to be averaging about four or five targets. That's fine, and it sounds good, especially if you're winning. But if this team is struggling and they start off 2-4, like, yeah, easier said than done, him being happy in that situation, I think.
And that's why when he claims he's having fun and it's enjoyable to go to work every day and Nick Sirianni has a good vibe, it's so easy to say that on September 5th, September 4th, September 3rd, September 2nd. Just wait until a handful of games go down and maybe you're losing and you're not getting as many touches. And I wonder, though, is there a way to look at it from a positivity perspective if you're Zach Ertz? I'm 30 years old. It's probably best for my longevity if I am not having 116 receptions, if I'm not having 98 receptions, if maybe I'm a little bit less than that. And, you know, I'm still providing a ton for this team, and I'm adding to the leadership, and we have a new culture to set here, and I'm with Lane another season. I'm with Fletch. I'm with Brandon. I'm with these guys that we've grown together so much, not only as football players, but as human beings and families as well. You know, maybe the longevity of it, and look, maybe I'm just being naive as hell here, but is there an element to maybe less is good right now for Zach coming off of an injury, looking at more 31 and looking at being, you know, older in his career. He's not 25, 26 anymore. Is that a possibility of a way to analyze it if that was the case, to stay upright, to keep your head up high, to not feel backstabbed if he's not getting as many touches?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I guess from a longevity standpoint, an NFL career only lasts so long. If you're taking less hits, all that stuff, that, yeah, long-term, that potentially helps you. However, I think Zach Ertz still believes that he deserves another contract in this league, another bigger, big-esque, I guess, contract in this league, tight end standpoint. So him getting 96 catches again is probably going to help him.
Would it, though? Because I do believe that eventually in the NFL, they use that against him. If he had 50 compared to 99, other teams would say, Zach, you had 99. Think about your body of work. You've done so much damage to your body. It's sort of like the when you're an NFL running back, right? Let's say you have 5,000 rushing yard seasons. A team looking to sign you for a contract would actually use that against you because you have so much miles on the body. That's like, yeah, you're right, but eventually, your trajectory is now actually headed in the other direction because you carried the ball so much. Could another team utilize that against Zach Ertz?
I guess they could, yeah. But, like, what is Zach Ertz's value realistically as a free agent if he's only getting 40 catches compared to 96? Like, yeah, they can use that against him. But, like, he'll be like, yeah, all right, yeah, you have all these touches. But he'll be like, okay, I'm 30 years old and I can still rack up 96 catches, 90-plus, 100 catches consistently. I've done it three of the last 4 years. So there's ways to look at it both sides.
Yeah, it's got to be somewhere in between. So yeah, not 30 or 40 where you didn't get enough, but if he had 118, maybe they could use it against him, where if it's more in that middle ground, it's, look, I can give you consistently 75 and run you through 17 games this season and be someone where other teams, when they do their defensive schemes throughout the week, hey, watch out for Zach Ertz, because they can constantly keep just going to him, targeting him. You know that he'll catch the football. He's reliable. So maybe if it's more in that middle ground, I'm just looking at all ways. I don't personally, it depends, right? It only takes one team to sign you to a contract. So if five teams would use it against you and one team uses it a different way, well, it only takes one team to sign that contract. But it's interesting because in this league, one thing that will always stick in my brain when thinking about contracts and players and what's next in any organization, as soon as you sign that big ticket, they're looking for a cheaper version of you right away. Instantly, as soon as they sign you, it's how can we get that level of production for a cheaper option? That's what it is.
Especially in the tight end and like running back, you know, positions. Like those are kind of interchangeable positions. You don't need to spend big money when it comes to the running back or tight end. Those are needs that can be addressed in the draft for much cheaper. That's why it's so hard to get that next contract as a running back, as a tight end. So it's a tricky situation. Obviously, Zach Ertz has been a great player for this Eagles franchise. Kind of curious how, you know, what comes of this, what we're going to see next after this season.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, this season's all about setting you up for the following season and having some of these questions answered so we can make the proper decisions, you know, with Nick Sirianni, with Jalen Hurts, with Howie Roseman, and the rest of the gang. 610-632-0975 is the phone number. Giving away FanFest tickets all show long. So we will continue the conversation. Chris, we will begin with you on the other side, and then it could be you at 610-632-0975. We're talking Eagles. I'm Broats, and this is 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.